Good morning. Welcome on this wet morning. Thank you for coming out. My name is Patty Colombo. I'm one of the members of the Board of Trustees. It's good to welcome you all here this morning. We welcome all, regardless of age, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, religious background, or political affiliation, factors that can separate us in our larger world. If this is your first time visiting, please join us after the service. We have coffee. I'm not sure if the bagels have arrived yet. You might have to go home and eat leftover pumpkin pie, but hopefully the bagels will be arriving. I think everybody's on vacation today, including our bagel delivery. Let's see. I know I see some new faces and some faces we haven't seen in a while. So welcome, everyone. If you are new and you have questions, feel free to talk to me after the service. I'd be glad to answer any of your questions. Our services will differ each week, especially around the holidays. So please be sure to come back and join us several times over the next couple of weeks. I see in our notice that it indicates that we have an activity for the children out in the fireplace room. We actually don't. We do have childcare, though. So if you do have children in the room and they are getting a little antsy, we do have Ingrid, who is our nursery provider out there. And right now she only has my 7-year-old son. So please, if kids need to go out, she's out there. And they have the whole Sunday school space to explore this morning. I'd like to just have you take note of the different announcements. We have several announcements, many different activities coming up over the next couple of weeks, so please pay attention to all of those. And I'm not aware of any other announcements that we need to make. Okay, all right, thank you.
Thanks, Patty. I give you all extra points for coming out on a day like today. And also, let us keep in mind all those who, in our congregation and elsewhere, who are wending their way home today. May they do so safely. Our many different paths come together in this special place, graced by the history of our free religious heritage. Let us be mindful of forces deep within, which call us to become more than what we are. May this hour bring rest and renewal, comfort and challenge. May we be reminded here of our highest aspirations and inspired to bring our gifts of love and service to the altar of humanity. May we know once again that we are not isolated beings, but that we are connected in mystery and miracle to the universe, to this community, and to each other. Now, I think Bilardi Baker team is going to be lighting the chalice this morning. Rise.
Okay, may the light of this flame illuminate our lives and strivings of the Spirit. May it heal misunderstanding and strengthen love.
Now let us say the words of our affirmation, also found in your order of service. Love is the doctrine of this fellowship. The quest for truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek truth in love, to serve humanity in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow into harmony. Thus do we covenant one with another. Before we begin our fellowship greeting, I'd like to call your attention to our first hymn that we will sing directly after. It's number 347. Gather the Spirit. You might want to open up your hymnals to that before you now greet one another.
I am the Emperor.
I am the Emperor.
This
There is a child care worker out there who will be happy to be with them. Our Candles of Joys and Sorrows is always a special time for us here at the Fellowship, as in most Unitarian Universalist churches. It's a time when we can share what's most important in our hearts with one another, the joys as well as the sorrows and concerns as well. So if you have a joy or a sorrow you'd like to share, please feel free to come up and light a candle and tell us what it is.
Say? We're lighting a candle for a dear family friend of ours who recently passed away. I should get a bunch of things. So that's for Grandpa George, for the kids, who was like a grandfather. And the candle's also for thanks, because it's been a long time since we've been here. And also for my dad, who's been having a rough time since having cancer a year ago and lots of surgery. So we got a lot of stuff going on.
Well, it's very nice to be here again on a Sunday morning. I'm afraid I've been pretty preoccupied with family issues and so forth, but it's wonderful to be here. I'd like to say that I have some sadness, and my sadness has to do with the fact that we have many empty seats this morning, and we're probably putting out too many chairs. And I hope maybe we'll put out a few less next Sunday and the Sunday after, so we can feel as though we're a little bit more gathered together in spirit and in good health and in preparation for the holidays. And I'd like to say that I have some real sadness that I've not gotten to know Lynn Plum even better, but I'm sorry to know that she will be leaving us. But I'm also having some joy this morning because I see a very dear neighbor of mine who is here. Her name is Ruth Rinklin, and she lives across the way. And we've been very happy to get to know each other, but busy lives don't always spend a lot of time together. And so I'm encouraging everyone to think more about all the positive things about each other and the fact that we have so much to celebrate. And I'd like to see us strengthening our fellowship in community and good spirit. And so I'm going to light a candle on those accounts. Thank you very much.
I'm lighting this candle for Mike's mom, who was discharged from Burke Rehab on Thanksgiving Day, just in time to come have some turkey with us. She had been in the hospital for 3 weeks and was at Burke for 2 weeks. And she's getting ready to move into a condo before Christmas. So this is just a candle of good health for her as she goes through this stressful time, and that we'll all get through it in good health.
My name is Merle Kitchen, and I've been around a while. I'm lighting this candle Pringa. She didn't tell us her name. And the reason I particularly mentioned it is Inga has been materially responsible historically for the beauty that you see on these walls. So thank her for that. Nice to have you around.
Hi, I'm Susie Novak. This is a candle of thanks. Last week, as many of you, you know, I am struggling a little bit. I have a wonderful new job. I've been in the school system for the last 20-some years, and most of that time has been spent teaching kids. But this year I am not in the classroom, but working with teachers and veteran teachers and new teachers and all kinds of great things. And it's a wonderful new job. But it's a struggle because I'm not in contact with kids anymore. And in my mailbox a couple of days ago was a small bag, and when I opened it, it was a photograph from last June's graduation where I had the last of three kids in a family, and it was a picture of all three of those kids and me and individual notes thanking me for my role in their children's lives. And needless to say, it was a pretty emotional time, and I guess my candle is for thanks that people, for people who take the trouble to thank people who do something in their lives. And I hope all of you can do that for all the people who need thanks in your lives. Mm-hmm. I'm very lucky that someone did that for me.
One candle I would like to light for Jerry Morton and her family. Jerry's mother just died this past week, and a bit unexpectedly, although she had been ill. And Jerry and her family have been in Connecticut all week with that. So, and I told her I would do this. And the last candle is for any joy, concern, or sorrow that might be unspoken, but still very much with us. May we keep all of these, the spoken and the unspoken ones, in our minds and in our hearts and in our prayers this coming week. This morning's reading, At Home in the Wilderness by Edward White, actually is just a chapter of his book called Saying Goodbye. And this book is exclusively about how congregations say goodbye to their ministers and vice versa. And so from it, I take the following reading. Have you ever been lost in the wilderness? It's not like being lost in civilization. Generally, when we get lost in the city, it's a nuisance. We have to call for directions and retrace our steps. It's embarrassing when we walk in 20 minutes late for the meeting. But when you get lost in the wilderness, your very life can be at stake. The closest I've come to it is to be lost at sea in a small boat in the fog without a compass. After a time of considerable anxiety, I picked up the sound of a friendly fog horn off Breton Reef, Rhode Island. Were it not for that fog horn, I might yet be drifting in the North Atlantic. It is a scary thing to be lost in the wilderness. Yes, the wilderness itself is a scary place. Everything is unpredictable in the wilderness. We are not in control. There are many dangers, and we are very vulnerable. That is why the human race constantly tries to escape from the wilderness. Ever since the Tower of Babel, we human beings have tried to build cities and to create civilization to escape from the wilderness. We want a world that is predictable and where we can be in control, where we can push buttons and turn switches to go where we want to go and do what we want to do according to our own schedule. Above all, we want to be insulated from risk, danger, and pain. The only trouble is, we never quite succeed. No matter how hard we try to create a safe, predictable world where we can be in control, the wilderness keeps invading our lives. No matter how hard we try, we cannot escape the wilderness. We can never have a world where we are in control, where we are secure from danger, and where there is no uncertainty. And learning to be at home in the wilderness is essential to our capacity to say goodbye. Our quest for civilization is above all a quest for security. Ultimately, the obsession with security is an obsession with death. Our fear of death cripples our ability to undertake the risks of living in the wilderness of this chaotic and fallen world. I know a young woman who belonged to a congregation. She married a professor at the local university. The service was held at the church, and the whole congregation came. Everyone rejoiced for Margie and Joe. But Margie and Joe knew one thing that no one else knew. Joe suffered from sickle cell anemia, a disease that is ultimately fatal. Margie and Joe did not know whether they would have 2 weeks or 2 months or 2 years together. They celebrated their anniversaries each month, monthiversaries. As it turned out, they had 2 years together. Then one day, Joe came home from school not feeling well. 24 hours later, he was gone. Shortly afterwards, I saw Margie and was upset by the news. She ended up consoling me. "Look at it this way, Ed," she said with a gentle smile. "He's at peace now, and I'm at peace because we did have 2 wonderful years together." Margie knew how to be at home in the wilderness, and therefore she knew how to say goodbye. So ends our reading. This congregation is the community of ourselves. Its energy and resources are our energy and resources. Its wealth is what we share. As we contribute to the life of this community, we affirm our lives within it. This morning's offering will now be taken. Thank you. Let us now read responsively number 468 found in the back of your hymnals. We need one another. We need one another when we mourn and would be comforted.
We need one another when we are in trouble and afraid.
We need one another when we are in despair, in temptation, and need to be recalled to our best selves again.
We need one another when we would accomplish some great purpose and cannot do it alone.
We need one another in the hour of success when we look for someone to share our triumphs.
We need one another in the hour of defeat, when with encouragement we might endure and stand again.
We need one another when we come to die and would have gentle hands prepare us for the journey.
All our lives are in need, and others are in need of us.
Let us now be in the spirit of meditation. Between the morning and the night of our desires, between our ideals and our accomplishments, we would pause to reflect on the meaning of life, and especially on the meaning of our own lives. May we have the wisdom to see that only a few things bear the mark of the eternal. The giving we have invested in others. The love we have expressed in deeds. The work we did because we loved it. The truth we spoke and followed. The justice we stood for despite the fear of consequences. The evil we turned into good because we saw that none of us lives apart, but all are members one of another. May we come to see the meaning of our days so that we might begin to live more deeply and more fully. May we lift up our eyes to the holy mountain and seek the steady stars at night. In the quiet of the next few moments, let us think on these things. By the meditations of our hearts and the reflections of our minds, may we be lifted up in higher resolve and greater commitment. Amen. Now let us sing our next hymn, number 205, an old favorite, Amazing Grace.
Thank you.
Farewell. Goodbye. Take care. Cheerio. Adios. Adieu. These last two words expressed at parting are translated from the Spanish and the French as to God. And then there is the English rather outdated word of parting, but with similar meaning, Godspeed. All of these words are spoken when two or more people are separating one from the other and are spoken from the heart. They are words meant to impart a sense of respect and warmth, love and good wishes for each person who is going away from the other. It becomes a benediction, a good saying, a sanctification, a holy acknowledgement of time spent together, a hallowing of that time and of each person's time to come. It is the final gift one brings to the other, a boon that guides them on the path ahead. The English word Godspeed is particularly meaningful, I think. In Hebrew, the word is ruach, a word that has so many lovely meanings. It is the wind of God, as it were, the breath of God speeding down to us in an all-enveloping, invigorating, but gentle whoosh. It is the wind, the breath of life, the spirit of life that unites humans with God in order to awaken and reawaken our souls. Adios, adieu, Godspeed, go with God, be with God. It is the wind, the breath, the spirit bringing life, wisdom, understanding, acceptance. Ruach, Godspeed, go now. With God's holy breath, God's spirit guiding you along your way, it says. No matter what your definition of God may be, or even if you do not have a definition at all, it is still a beautiful image. It can still connote a sacredness to the art of saying adieu, saying goodbye. What is the guiding wisdom that the image of the breath, the Spirit of God, reveals to us as we part from one another? It is the wisdom that knows and accepts life's impermanence. It is the wisdom that knows that life is full of partings and meetings, ebbing and flowing, coming and going, living and dying. This is a bit of wisdom that is millennia years old. In the pre-Hebraic Sumerian epic of Gilgamesh, we see it in the all-powerful king, Gilgamesh, who is mythically two-thirds god and one-third man. He rules over the city of Uruk with its lavish and amazing splendors of the day. Through a series of trials and tribulations, which includes an all-encompassing flood that forms the basis for the later Hebraic Noah in the Ark story, we finally see an older but wiser God-man-king who at last realizes that there is no permanence, he said. Do we build a house to stand forever? Do we seal a contract to hold for all time? From the days of old, there is no permanence. And so we humans create this wonderful image and develop this marvelous art of adieu to help us through such times, to help us accept such a parting, inevitable as it may be. When I mentioned I would be doing a sermon on this topic, two separate people here at the fellowship mentioned to me what your previous minister, Reverend Liz Lerner, had said about this art of adieu upon her leaving. She had researched and presented a 5-step process for dealing with a parting of the ways. It was first to reminisce, to remember all the times the people had together. And then second, to acknowledge what the relationship has meant, with whatever emotion that goes with it. Third, artfully praising what was good and worthy in that relationship. And then promising what they can as regards to their future. And lastly, was giving a benediction, a good saying, a Godspeed, if you will. Truly, this is a fine plan for saying goodbye. It is one that we all can utilize whenever we are saying a permanent goodbye to anyone of or any group at any time in our lives. When we are moving to a new location, perhaps, when a neighbor or friend or a loved one moves away, when we leave a particular working place or group, when someone we love is dying. They are appropriate and healing and inspiriting steps in the art of adieu. They ennoble ourselves and others. They help us go on with good and thankful hearts. Another way of developing of the art of saying goodbye, we have seen in our reading today. Whenever we experience a loss or anticipate its coming soon, we are in a wilderness, White says. We are in a place where we are not in control. Even though our wishes may be to have things as they were, to have the people about us that we wish to still be with us, we cannot make them stay. We cannot make things be the way we want it to be many times in our lives. Like being lost in a fog at sea, we fear those times in the wilderness. We fear those times when we feel insecure about the changes that are occurring without our bidding. We fear the unpredictability of life, and thus saying goodbye is all the more difficult. White goes on to explain how saying goodbye to a congregation's minister can be particularly scary and emotionally laden. In fact, he likens it to the emotional process of saying goodbye to a minister of a congregation to the process that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross presented in her book on death and dying. He says that in every pastoral transition within a congregation, some dying occurs in both the minister who leaves and in the church community left behind. White believes that the feeling experienced by both the minister and the congregation are similar to the physiological dying of loved ones. Do you remember the stages that Kubler-Ross presents? First, there is the denial stage, the say it isn't so stage. It is the refusal to face reality because it is too painful or unpleasant. How each of us may manifest denial can vary considerably. One such story of denial of a loss I told some of you once before, but I feel it bears repeating. It's a true story about people I knew well for quite a few years. It was of an older couple, Izzy and Selma, old enough to be my parents. They had been married for over 40 years before Izzy died. Their marriage had been a good one. They were close and did much together. And of course, Selma mourned Izzy a great deal after he died. A few months after his death, she confided in me this curious tale. She said that when Izzy was still alive, they had once traveled to Italy. There, Izzy had bought a little figurine, an example of what the Italians call putti. It was a statue of a little naked boy in that certain pose that is frequently found in water fountains in Italy. You know what I mean? Selma thought it was in poor taste, but despite her protests, Izzy bought it anyway. When they returned home, he insisted on placing it on a shelf in their living room. Well, soon Selma, when Izzy was away, would turn that figurine around so that only its backside was visible. Then, when Selma wasn't around, Izzy would turn it around to the front again. It became a kind of game between them, this turning of the statue back and front. It was something that they never shared with others. It was their little secret for years. After Izzy's funeral, Selma turned the statue permanently facing the back, or so she thought. A short time later, Selma noticed that the figurine was facing front again. She racked her memory, thinking that perhaps a recent visitor to her home, where she now lived alone, had done it. She turned it back again. But soon after, she noticed that it had turned to the front again. This time she knew no one had been in the house since she had last turned it. And this turning back and forth between Selma and who knows what continued to happen in the succeeding weeks. What could this mean? Now, Selma was a Wellesley College-educated mathematics professor, sharp, practically minded, precise and particular in her habits and in her speech, a no-nonsense kind of individual who was skeptical about religious ideas of any kind, even though she was and was only nominally of Jewish background. Selma divulged to me that she had striven to find a logical explanation for this phenomenon, as she called it. She grilled Izzy's friends, thinking maybe he had told one of them to sneak into the house after he died and continue the game in his name. They emphatically, compassionately denied knowing anything about it. She had investigated the possibility of dynamiting occurring in the area, shaking up houses and perhaps moving the figurine, of large trucks rattling past and perhaps shaking up the little puto. Nope. There had been no such occurrences in her quiet residential street. She had stayed up all night more than once, watching that statue to see if it would move. It never did in her presence, just as Izzy never moved it when she was around. She was stumped. Logically, to her, it made no sense. She asked my opinion as a minister, who would know about these things? Thinking of Izzy. The Izzy I had known so well myself, all I could think of to say to her was, well, Selma, I think Izzy's just saying hello to you. Yes, she said, that is exactly what I've come to believe, despite everything I have ever thought possible in the past. I've even started to have conversations with him. Now, the realistically minded ones among us might well say that Selma was deluding herself. She was the one turning that figurine both ways and just didn't want to admit it, even to herself. Psychologists would say that there was a part of her subconscious that needed to still keep Izzy alive, that couldn't quite accept his death, that was denying the death in a rather engaging way. Sometimes we need to deny reality for a time. Sometimes we need to deny a loss, deny that we need to say goodbye to someone we hold dear for a while. And sometimes this stage can go on in some form for quite a while after the loved one is gone, especially if it is a fairly innocuous denial, one that is more help than in the mourning process than hindrance. But one might be advised to watch out for those denials that might be more of a hindrance to getting on with one's life, however. The second stage in Kubler-Ross's process is anger. It is the raging against the inevitable, the impending or actual loss, and it can be expressed in many indirect ways, especially if one is unable to express one's anger directly at the person leaving, at the change taking place. The anger might get directed to other innocent people, perhaps, or a person who represents the change that the loss has created. The next stage is one of bargaining, asking if there is not some other way that a person can stay, perhaps, that one does not have to say goodbye. The next stage, resignation, is one we may want to pay particular attention to, for it can lead to a deep sadness, even depression. We may go over the relationship and beat our breasts over what might have been, or over what could have been if we had only done such and such, or over if the other person to whom we must say goodbye had only done such and such. As Emily Dickinson once expressed it, parting is all we know of heaven and all we need of hell. But it also can be a time for acknowledging the positive things about the relationship, too. It is the necessary last stage before the final one, the one about letting go and moving on. Notice, people are often rather quick to move on to this stage. But if they have not undergone at least some of the previous stages in some sort of conscious way, says Kubler-Ross, they really are not in a good position to move on and are really not letting go of the past relationship. They remain stuck in one of the other stages and cannot truly let go and move on. And this will hinder future relationships. It will hinder truly coming to that place of Godspeed, of adieu, of a truly sacred acknowledgement of what has been and what now must be. It can hinder the wisdom that rises above the denying, the anger, the sadness of parting. I will be leaving you in a month and a half's time now, on January 15th. I hope that many of you have already gone through at least some of these stages of Kubler-Ross, or at least the ones that Reverend Lerner suggested some years ago now. Some of you might ask yourselves, if you had indeed gone through any of these stages, especially of Kubler-Ross, with some of the many previous ministers you have had recently, had you adequately gone through these stages in your goodbyes to some of your beloved ministers in the past? Were you ready to let go and move on? It is difficult enough to do every once in a great while, doubly difficult when one must do it frequently. This congregation has had to say goodbye to many a minister in the last 14 years. It is much to absorb. It is much to ask of any congregation. But it is not an impossible task. It is indeed one in which we all must undergo so many times in our lives as individuals, as well as congregants. Remember what White said, learning to be at home in the wilderness is essential to our capacity to say goodbye. There is one other word of goodbye, of parting, I would like to bring before you now, and that is the Jewish word shalom, meaning peace. It is a word expressed both at parting, but also as a greeting. It is the shortened form of the expression meaning, may peace be with you. I like the message that it brings to us, that saying goodbye can be simultaneously also be saying hello to whatever is coming next. It is doing so in a sacred way, mindful of the ever cycle of coming and going in our lives. It encourages us to consider that we do need to master them both if we are ever to be at home, to be comfortable, whenever the wilderness is there before us. And it tells us that to do so gives us peace. May we ever try to master the art of saying adieu. May we hold our goodbyes close to our hearts, but also let them go from us in peace. May we hallow them by acknowledging all the memories if a goodbye brings forth. May we feel the breath of God, however we can name it, as we go along our frequent journeys in the wilderness. May we finally remember that peace is there for us all, that peace is born by accepting wholeheartedly both the goodbyes and the hellos. Amen. Now let us sing our next hymn, number 131, Love Will Guide Us. As a closing, I bring before you an Irish blessing. Deep peace of the running wave to you. Deep peace of the flowing air to you. Deep peace of the great earth to you. Deep peace of the shining stars to you. Deep peace to each of us gathered here today. And now let us say the words of our chalice, extinguishing together. Carry the flame of peace and love until we meet again. Let us sing together.
Go now in peace. Go.